This summer, click into cordless power with Memorial Day Savings at the Home Depot. Tackle more than half an acre of grass with the convenience and gas-like power of the Ryobi 40-volt battery-powered mower. And keep your flower beds looking fresh with the 40-volt cordless string trimmer. Then clear leaves and debris with the 40-volt leaf blower. No cords, no gas, no hassle. Click into Memorial Day Savings happening now at the Home Depot and on homedepot.com. How doers get more done.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Welcome to Money Making Conversations. It's the show that shares the secrets of success experienced firsthand by marketing and branding expert Rashawn McDonald. I will know. He's given me advice on many occasions, and in case you didn't notice, I'm not broke. You know he'll be interviewing celebrity CEOs, entrepreneurs, and industry decision makers. It's what he likes to do. It's what he likes to share. Now it's time to hear from my man, Rashawn McDonald. Money Making Conversations. Here we go.
Hi there. This is Rashawn McDonald, and it is cold in the South. That's right. The South, everybody said, move to the South, it's warm. No. Move to the South and it is very cold. So this is my air in the summer. I'm going to tell you something. Why I'm doing this interview right now, in January, it is cold. So whenever you hear this interview, if it repeats, it's cold when I'm doing this interview. So when I finish the interview, I'll be snuggling up in my gloves and my big hat and my big coat and going home and getting in the bed that's going to keep me warm all night. Yes, I am Rashawn McDonald. I am the host of this weekly Money Making Conversation Masterclass show. The interviews and information that this show provides are for everyone. It's time to start reading other people's success stories and start living your own. My guest on the show today is Dr. Chuck Wallington. He is the author of A Seat at the C-Suite Table, Insights from the Leadership Journeys of African-American Executives. Please welcome to Money Making Conversations Masterclass, Dr. Chuck Wallington. How you doing, sir?
I'm well, Rashawn. How are you doing?
And you someplace warm, my brother? Please tell me. Yes.
I am not. I wish I were. I am in Greensboro, North Carolina, and it's cold here today as well.
Very cold. They say it's a climate change. Well, I'm experiencing the climate change because, brother, it is chilly. But I'm born and raised in Houston, Texas, so I'm a Southern boy. So you're in Greensboro, so you know that it's that's the South too. So that's exactly the statement that you know is warm in the South. That's not true today for you nor I. And how you doing? That's you got right. A book out? Huh? A book coming out? Tell us about it right quick.
I am doing well, and I do have a book that's in the market, and it's called A Seat at the C-Suite Table. And I was inspired to write this book after having worked in corporate America for now 35 plus years. Mm. I'm still working in corporate America. And I've always wondered, are the journeys for other people who look like me the same as mine, or are they different? And so that's what inspired me to actually write the book. And I reached out to 30 black men who are currently working in U.S. corporations in C-suite roles, and I asked them if they would share their leadership journeys with me. And they did so. And this became my doctoral dissertation research, and it's now a book that's available in the marketplace today.
I have to ask you the question, why did you not include a woman?
You know what? There's been a lot of research already about women, and their stories are important for sure. As a black male, though, I wanted to understand and to highlight the unique journeys of black men. So that's why I chose to narrow my focus and focus on Black men. Now, if there's a part two to this, who knows? Maybe that could then focus on the journeys of Black women.
Well, you know, being a former employee of IBM, I worked there 2.5 years undergraduate, 2.5 years graduate. My degree is in mathematics. So I was a guy who's journeying in that direction to an executive. But we all need to be educated. So what exactly do you mean when you say C-suite? What is that? What does that term mean?
Great. That's a great question. So that term broadly refers to people who are the chiefs of the areas for which they're responsible. So think of the chief financial officer, the chief executive officer, the chief operating officer, the chief marketing and communications officer. It's the most senior person in an organization who's responsible for that particular function. And the collective of those, so the 8 or 9 or 10 or whatever the small number tends to be, those folks typically report to the CEO, and they're the ones who make the strategic decisions for the organization. So that's the C-suite. There are not a lot of people there. And for people of color, it can be a challenge at best to get there. And then there you have your own unique experiences once you're there.
Yeah. You know, the interesting thing about it, like I said, I was I went to college. I graduated in 83. So I worked for IBM from 83 to 86. And so because it's about mentorship, and that word wasn't used back then as it is used today, about who you turn to, who you communicate, because that helps you. That helps you toe the line, you know. So I had no one I could turn to, even, you know, that was above me. I had people on my same level, you know, but no one above me that can tell me or, you know, reach back and pull me up or tell me what I had to do get up. Did any of them discuss that mentorship availability as they were growing their career objectives of, you know, ascending the ladder?
Yes, there was great conversation among the 30 of them. And remember, I interviewed them individually and then I kind of pulled the data together collectively. So, yes, one of the themes was that these men would love to have had mentors, coaches, sponsors, and allies. Some of them did and some of them didn't. Those who did have mentors talked very fondly about the role the mentors played for them, how the mentors opened doors for them, how the mentors helped them to navigate the corporate culture. For those who didn't, they talked about how they yearned for mentors. Even today, even though they've reached the C-suite, many of them still yearn for mentors. They talked about, if you didn't have a mentor, how they had to navigate the system themselves, how they had to figure things out, how they had to figure out what the culture of their organization was. And they talked about how challenging it was. It wasn't impossible for them, but it was more challenging. And they talked about how they just wished they'd had mentors and sponsors and coaches and role models, or at least more of them, for sure.
I know it's very important. I've shared my story of my experience of being hired full time, because when you work part time, there's some, you know, there's some allowances on how you should dress, and because you're in college, you know, so they won't be they can be more accommodating to your clothes that you wear. When I came on full time, then I still was in that college mindset, you know, kind of wearing, and it was IBM when IBM was really, you know, you had to really dress a certain way, you know, had to have that gray suit, that brown suit, that black suit, you know, a blue navy blue suit, red tie, all that stuff, because that was the format that they had. Today, a lot of people are a lot more casual. People pitch casual Fridays at various major corporations. But I came on board, and that's why mentorship is important. Nobody told me, Rashawn, you're not in college anymore. You're going to have to change the way you look. So I was rolling through, Chuck. I was rolling through, wondering why I wasn't getting promoted, wondering why I wasn't getting invited into any inner circle meetings that I felt would benefit me to grow as a potential executive. Because at that moment, that's what I wanted to be. I wanted to be an IBM executive. I wanted to go up the food chain, but nobody told me. So I was walking in there with my little stylish pointy-toe shoes, and then I had my little skinny tie, and I wouldn't wear a full suit. I would have a little blazer jacket, you know, the pants, they were fly, you know, as long as the ladies said they were looking nice, I was putting it on, you know what I'm saying, Chuck? And so
I know what you're saying,
you know what I'm saying? So, but I'm just telling people the truth. That's when you don't have people telling you or pulling your coattail, telling you, young man, you look nice, But what are you trying to achieve here? If I sat down and said, sir, I want to be an executive at IBM, they told you, well, you're dressing wrong, young man. That's what mentorship mm-hmm. will do for you. And that's why I want to bring it up, because you can go through the whole process. And I'm going to tell you something. I got hired with two white guys at the same time, and they were just flying mm-hmm. through. But they were not dressing like mm-hmm. Rashawn McDonald. They weren't as fly as Rashawn McDonald. Mm-hmm. They were playing mm-hmm. the roles. We had the white suits, white conservative Stacey Adams on, and conservative wingtip shoes on, and they had the white shirt with the tie that was appropriately deemed the role right. you should wear when you go into the corporate experience. And I had to go and talk to my supervisor, and he had to tell me, Rashawn, in a professional way, because you really can't tell anybody, hey, you're dressing wrong when you're in a leadership role. He just told me, you may want to check how you're dressing. Look around. Look around at the leaders. Look around at mm-hmm. the supervisors. Do you see anybody dressed like you, Rashawn? And I had to admit, no. And when I admitted to myself, no, then I went out and bought me some suits and went in the store. At the time, I could buy three suits they were $99 each. And I came back through that door, and my life changed. My life at IBM changed immediately because I played the role. And that's what you're talking about in mentorship. And I'm pretty sure those examples are what they were saying if they had somebody. They may not be extreme as mine, Chuck, but I tell you, you need some guidance when you walk into an environment that is predominantly white.
That's true. So you have to have the guidance. And certainly these men had some experiences as far as dress is concerned, but their experiences with mentors or the lack thereof went even deeper. So, you know, when you go into any organization, you know, there's a culture, right? There's a way that you do things and a way that you don't do things. And some of it's how you dress, but some of it's how that you act and how you conduct yourself. Some of it's just the more nuanced pieces of the white culture that some folks perhaps haven't been exposed to. Mm-hmm. All of that's important, and you have to learn how to navigate an organization's culture in order to be successful. So again, these men talked about how they learn how to navigate this white culture. And if you pause and think about it for a second, you know, the companies in the United States, for the most part, were created by white men for the success of white men. And so all the rules, all the regulations are for the success of white men. So think about what happens when a black man or a black woman or some other minority comes into an organization. The rules are already set against them, right? It doesn't mean they can't figure them out, and many people do. It just means it's a challenge on the front end to figure it out. That's what a mentor or a coach can help you do. And the men talked about the advantage of having mentors and coaches. And for those who didn't, they talked about the struggle, and fortunately they were still able to make it. So you're right. It's everything that includes dress, but it's not just dress. It's that and so much more.
Absolutely. I'm talking to Dr. Chuck Wallington. His book, A Seat at the C-Suite Table, Insights from the Leadership Journeys of African-American Executives. And it's really interesting because when I was, I come from the inner city. I graduated from the University of Houston, which is in Third Ward. I still hung out with my friends. I played Jamaica Sci Fi Fraternity Incorporated. So my black culture, I came from a black neighborhood. I went to a white school. I was fortunate to be the vice president of the student body while I was there. So mm-hmm. I understood communicating with everybody. But it's still, when I got to IBM, I didn't have a role model. And that's why I think the value of interning helps as well, because I'm just talking about not just these gentlemen, but we're talking about future. If you can intern at a company, it will help you and also lead you into some mentorship roles, because I think your book is about more so about these men, but also how society is today and how you can take advantage of some of the things that are available today. Correct, Chuck?
That's exactly right. And one of the first things that you have to do if you aspire for a seat at the C-suite table is to take the opportunities that come to you now. And so if you are young and in college and thinking about business as a career, that's great. And to your point, seek out every opportunity to learn. Go in, ask questions. Yes, you want to be compensated for what you do, and you don't have to come in making a whole boatload of money as an intern. It's very okay to come in and be compensated, and then go in and figure out what it is that you can learn so that you become even better at what you think you want to do. Internships also rule out things. So you may go into an internship and think you want to pursue one area. You may decide, I don't like that.
Right.
You discover something else along the way. That is the value and the beauty of an internship.
You know, it's really amazing how you sit down and, you know, I also encourage individuals to look at temporary employment opportunities because of the fact, like you said, I remember I used that a lot as well, Chuck, and laying out my aspirations because working at a temporary job, if they like you, then they'll keep you and hire you permanently. Because basically, especially today, a lot of companies are trying to avoid unemployment insurance or laying people off. They hire people through temporary assignments. And the whole thing in this conversation is getting to that C-suite and just seeing, is that the company for you? Because I knew in the end, I eventually left IBM, not because it was a bad company. It wasn't a dream that I had for my life. I prefer entertainment. And that's all you're saying as well, Chuck, is that understand the culture. Understand, is this your final goal? Is this the environment that you want to aspire? And the only way you're going to do that is through interning, mentorship, as well as job experience, correct?
Yes, that's true. And you made a reference here that I'm going to follow up on. Think about the industry that you want to go into. So I had never thought about going into healthcare. And 12 years ago, I had a chance to come into healthcare in a leadership role.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what landed me in my C-suite role that I'm blessed to hold today. But I'd never thought about healthcare. I'd worked in financial services and consumer packaged goods. And I'm a newspaper reporter by training, briefly right out of undergraduate school. So I'd never thought about it. But everybody owes it to him or herself to think about, what about the industry? And can I see myself in that industry? Can I get excited about the work that happens in healthcare or in financial services or whatever your industry of choice happens to be? And again, for your younger listeners, the beauty of it now is you don't have to have it all figured out. You get to explore numbers of industries that you might be interested in, and you will eventually land in one that really resonates with you and speaks to who you are and what you're passionate about.
Yes, you don't have to go to find you a botanica, you know, that big old dictionary on that wall that you had to look through all the different words and figure out what's going on. I'm speaking to Dr. Chuck Wallington. He's the book. The book is the author, A Seat at the C-Suite Table, Insights from the Leadership Journeys of African-American Executive. When we come back, I'll be asking Dr. Wallington, how did he select these male executives? You know, did he pull them out of the hat? Were they recommended? How did he find? He found 30 of them. Where did they come from? We'll be right back with more money making.
When it comes to ensuring your company has top-notch security practices, things can get complicated fast. Vanta automates compliance for ISO 27001 SOC 2 and more, saving you time and money. Unify your security program management and streamline security reviews with AI-powered security questionnaires. Over 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, FlowHealth, and Quora use Vanta to build trust and improve security in real time. Access Vanta's free suite of resources to scale your governance, risk, and compliance program at vanta.com/special. That's vanta.com/special.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. oracle.com/strategic.
The wait is over. The Chi is back on Paramount Plus, and the stakes have never been higher. Everything changes on the South Side when a new threat comes to power in the Showtime original series from Emmy winner Lena Waithe. Battle lines will be drawn, alliances will shift, and danger lies around every corner, leaving everyone to wonder who they can trust. Visit ParamountPlus.com/TheShot to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto-renews. Restrictions apply.
Conversation Masterclass. My guest is Dr. Chuck Wallington. He's author of the book, The C-Suite, get correct name, A Seat at the C-Suite Table, Insights from Leadership Journeys of African-American Executives. And these 30 African-American executives are male. How did you line them up, or how did they come into your book?
That's a great question. The headline there is There's a God Somewhere. And I say that with all sincerity, because when I started this research, I knew four, maybe five of these executives myself. And I had a goal of 30. And I said, you know what, I can get to 30. And the methodology that I used, quite frankly, was as I would finish an interview with someone, I would say, can you please refer me to someone else? And so I got to the 30 because a lot of the men that I interviewed reintroduced me to someone else. I'll also tell you that I reached out to women that I knew and said, I'm doing this research. Can you connect me with someone? And I am surprised. Well, I am not surprised, but women answered my call. And they really reached out and they referred me to folks whom they work with or people whom they know. In a couple of cases, a couple of women referred me to their husbands. Mm. And that's how I arrived at the 30. So I owe a huge debt of gratitude not only to the 30 men for saying yes, but to the people who referred me to them for them to open up and to share their story.
Well, you brought up God and faith in
yes.
how we get there. I know that... faith for a lot of people, they show it publicly. And a lot of people, especially in the corporate world, you can't really display your faith, you know. And so how has faith played a role in your life, and how do you allow it to be shared amongst people when you're delivering speaking engagements, or do you keep it within yourself?
You know what? I have gotten to the point in life where I am not going to keep my faith to myself.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that I shout it from the rooftop when it's inappropriate, but it does mean when it is appropriate, I do not hide the fact that I'm a Christian and I believe in what I believe in. And so in the workplace, you know, there are opportunities and one-on-one conversations to weave in faith. There are times when people come to me and they want to close the door and have a confidential conversation, and I will listen. I can tell if people, you know, believe in a higher being, and, and we can turn the conversation to that, and I can encourage them to be prayerful about whatever it is that they are concerned about. So I am not one to walk away from my faith, and it is crystal clear to me that you and I would not be having this conversation right now if the God that I choose to serve had not ordained all of it and set it into motion. So I am thankful for that, and I appreciate you giving me this chance to have this conversation.
Well, you know, it's really one that I want to have, you know. And I was speaking with a good friend of mine, Yolanda Adams, gospel singing legend, and I was trying to get her to define to me the difference between business and faith. And she said, Rashawn, they're one and the same. You know, because, you know, it's about effort. It's about applying, consistency and a belief. You know, if you believe in your business, you believe in your faith, they're tied together. Is that something that you can relate to when she says that? Because I really thought you had to separate them. Now, you trying to bring them together. She said, no, don't try to separate them. Embrace them and use them as dual motivation for your ultimate goal. Does that make sense?
If what she says makes sense, then I'm going to broaden it to work for me. So my faith is a part of my life and who I am.
Right.
And I choose to not separate it as I go through life. So I choose not to separate it from what I do at work. I choose to not separate it from home and family and friends. It is all a part of who I am, and it's a part of what matters to me the most. So that's how I choose to look at it. I choose to not separate it out, but look at it as, you know, the way that I am, and it's a huge part of who I am.
Let me ask you, Dr. Wallington, you know, DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, you know, it's been 2 years ago, it was really hammered. And even Elon Musk has an issue with DEI, and he's getting in public spats with a basketball owner, used to be the owner of the Dallas Mavericks. He recently sold the team about DEI.
Mm-hmm.
Does DEI water down the accomplishments of the that is being achieved by C-suite executives?
I don't think it does at all, because remember, C-suite executives were achieving things long before diversity, equity, and inclusion, as we understand it now, was a real focus of conversation. So, mm-hmm. so those achievements are what they are, and I celebrate those who've done them. I think now, you know, diversity, equity, inclusion are a foundation for what folks are striving to achieve. And diversity, equity, and inclusion, in my opinion, will always be important because there are gaps. There are clearly gaps between the world that we live in and function in and the world that others are blessed to live in and function in. And so DE&I simply acknowledges there are gaps, and DE&I says, here are ways that we can close those gaps by working together.
You know, everybody has a title. You know, every generation has a title. You know, like when I grew mm-hmm. up, I'm asking you because you're in the game, you know, and some turn mm-hmm. I'll only just suspect. I grew up affirmative action was the term that I grew up with, you know, and it feels to me that DEI is affirmative action, isn't it?
You know what? That's, I can see why you would say that, and I don't know that I have a point of view one way or the other. What I will continue to come back to is that there are gaps, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. There are clearly gaps between, again, I'm going to talk about what I know. If you look at the U.S. corporations, you know, there are gaps between positions of power, who holds positions of power, who gets to make the decisions, who doesn't get to make the decisions. There are gaps there. And mm-hmm. so, again, what I believe diversity, equity, inclusion does is acknowledges that there are gaps, and it gives us a foundation upon which to simply have a conversation and say, if we all acknowledge there are gaps, what are we going to do to close those gaps? And how can we work together to close those gaps?
And the reason I brought up my listeners, let them know that, you know, It's so hard to achieve anything, especially when you're a person of color, especially a person who's black, and especially if you're African-American male, you know. Not to water down the achievements and say it's easier for African-American females, but African-American males do place a much more crisis role in pursuing opportunities in the corporate structure that's predominantly mm-hmm. male-driven by whites. You know, what is the hopes for the next generation of black executives, Dr. Chuck Wallington?
So I'll tell you my hopes, and I'll tell you what the 30 men whom I talk to hope for. So the hope is that for those of us who are blessed to be in these roles now, that we will continue to do our very, very best in what we have been asked to do, and to leave the door open for the next generation of people who look like us. It's not enough to simply occupy these seats and leave. It is extremely important that we occupy these seats, that we're blessed to do well, and that we leave the door open so that others can come behind us and do even bigger and better work than we've been blessed to do.
I go to this question. You know the society we're living in. Race is at its highest. I think racial mm-hmm. issues, racial plays itself out. You know, the political climate is very racially driven. You know, you either this side of the ledger or you this side of the ledger. How can we close that gap, trying to move forward and just be recognized, not as the late Dr. Martin Luther King would say, not by the color of our skin? Because it seems that we are still being judged by that. And that's not fair, because when I walk in a room, you know I'm not a white guy.
Right. Right. Well, I think the first way of closing the gap is to acknowledge that there's a problem, that there is a gap. And so there's that. We have to acknowledge that there's a problem or a challenge or an opportunity. The second is to then bring together the right people and say, if we acknowledge there's a challenge or a gap, what are we willing to do as we work together to close the gap? And again, I talk about that in the book towards the end. So
yes, sir.
If you're a CEO and you know that you don't have representation from black men on your leadership team or anywhere in your ranks, you know, first of all, you have to acknowledge there's a challenge. And then you have to be willing to put together a plan that will bring in, you know, the right people. And then you have to support them along the way. You have to prop them up. You have to give them the infrastructure so that they will be successful. You have to also hold your other leadership colleagues accountable, because if they have opportunities or openings in their areas, Are they interviewing diverse slates of candidates to ensure that people who look like you and me have a chance to interview for these roles? If they are, great. If they're not, that's a problem. And what's going to be done about that? So, you know, that's one way to do it. Acknowledge that there's a gap or a problem and then bring the right people together, focused on generating solutions that will help to close.
Wow. How can we find this book? Is it online? Is it a website? Help us out right now. The book I'm talking about is A Seat at the Sweet Table, Insights from the Leadership Journeys of African-American Executives by Dr. Chuck Wallington. How can we find it?
This book is available online at Amazon or wherever you buy your books online. But I would suggest that folks go to Amazon and pick up a copy. Would love to have you do that.
Well, Dr. Chuck Wallington, I enjoyed this conversation. I hope it was moving for you. I learned a lot, and it's about exposing people to the next level of opportunity, and you're providing with this book. The book was a very, very good read, and I recommend it to anybody who's interested in this form of knowledge and learning, because we always want to take the next step, and your book allowed that through my reading.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity, and I wish you well, and I wish your readers well, or your listeners well.
Good. Talk to you soon, my friend, and be careful. And stay warm.
Thanks so much.
My next guest, he's on the call right now, and let me just tell you, I used to be a little chunky dude till I met this guy. So if you're concerned about losing weight, if you're concerned about how to do it and still have fun, and I have fun. My guest is coming up next. Don't go nowhere. It's New Year's resolution time. Everybody always sets them when they want to. It's about, I think the number one is weight loss, where my next guest is the man to talk to. Please come back to Money Making Conversations Masterclass.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of Money Making Conversations Masterclass. Money Making Conversations Masterclass with Rushon McDonald is produced by 3815 Media Inc. More information about 3815 Media Inc. is available at 3815media.com. And always remember to lead with your gifts.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
You never want to find yourself out on the water fishing without the essentials. So it's best to always pack a Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie to protect against the sun. I mean, it provides great protection and it's really breathable so you don't get hot. That's a win-win. Columbia PFG has a lot of great gear. So before you head out on the water, head over to Columbia.com/PFG to shop their performance fishing gear.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.